Health Magazine gives one Wisconsin school an A-plus when it comes to instilling healthy habits in students. Richmond Elementary School in Appleton is on the magazine's top 10 list for the healthiest schools in the nation. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just about 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 28th. We'll talk about what makes a school a healthy school this hour and what puts a school at the top of the class when it comes to health. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest from Health Magazine. We'll wonder from you, what's needed to make schools a healthier place for kids? 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Tracy Minkin is a lead writer for Health Magazine and the article, America's Healthiest Schools. It's an article that appears in the September issue of Health Magazine. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Well, I'm proud because I attended Richmond Elementary School in Appleton. Back then, though, we weren't so concerned about health habits, I don't think. Right now, it's important. Kids are more overweight and obese than ever before.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, about 4 years ago, there was a major media push acknowledging that, you know, American kids have a lot of problems with health currently. These relate to obesity, to certain risk factors. It sort of splashed across the nation's, you know, headlines. And since then, I think schools have really been wrestling, and in a substantial fashion, with what to do. And what we are celebrating in this issue with these 10 healthiest schools is some amazing things that have been going on, and it's really fun to put them out there and to inspire other schools and other families to look for changes like this in their own school programs if they're not already there.
So what gives Richmond School an A-plus?
Well, we found out you went there, so we thought
that
was probably a great thing. No, actually, Richmond Elementary is an absolutely wonderful school. We looked, when we produced this piece, for a variety of significant commitments to creating a healthier environment for kids that would inspire them to live healthier lives, both in the classroom, you know, on the playing fields, in the hallways, but also outside the school doors, back in their families. And one of the things that was a real standout quality at Richmond Elementary was how pervasive this commitment to health was in the school. The cooperation among all of the communities around a school were amazing to us at Richmond. They did incredibly well. They impressed us on so many fronts. But what we really loved was the buy-in all throughout the community.
Yeah. Well, do you know why that is?
Well, you know, Richmond showed us what they had. You know, when we went looking for these schools, we went all over the country. Not literally in a van, but, you know, through the internet and through the phone and through emails, talking to education specialists, talking to Department of Education administrators, talking to reformers, saying, tell us about schools you know that you think are great. Richmond came up, as did, you know, almost 100 schools, actually more than 100 schools, and then we had to narrow them down to one per state. At that point, we went to each school with a long set of criteria that had been developed, you know, with our staff on what might help us determine a healthy school. These had to do with food, nutrition, health education, fitness and activity, both in PE and in outside PE activities, healthy practices among staff and wellness programs. Anyway, we sent these criteria out to our schools and said, tell us what you've got, yes or no, what are you doing in these areas? There were at least 85 criteria that each school had to address. I have to tell you, we also did this in June, and I think any school that can respond in June to something that complicated deserves a medal, you know, unto itself. But Richmond showed us many, many things they were doing on lots of fronts, and you know, that's what brought them to our attention. From there, we assembled a panel of experts that looked at sort of the soft answers. We had each school describe their successes and talk to us about what creative things they had done and why and how they worked. And then there was a series of sort of scores that developed out of that. That is what put Richmond at the front of the class, as you said in your introduction. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk more about what makes a school a healthy school and a healthier place for kids. And we wonder from you, as kids are heading back to school next week, are there things that your school is doing to boost health or something you'd like to see your school do? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Richmond Elementary School in Appleton is on the top 10 list from Health Magazine as the healthiest schools in the nation. Maybe for some reason, Health Magazine missed your public school. Maybe you want to toot your public school's horn a little bit, too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Thursday, August the 28th. Coming up later today, John Munson in for Ben Marins. For most of the 20th century, it was solidly Democrat. But John Munson's guest after 5 says, leading up to the presidential election, the Democratic Party is struggling to secure the Catholic vote. So talk about the Catholic vote coming up this afternoon after 5 o'clock. We're talking about schools and healthy schools and why Richmond Elementary School in Appleton was just named one of the 10 healthiest schools in the nation by Health Magazine. And we're wondering from you what's needed to make schools healthier places for kids. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with a guest from Health Magazine about how it chose the healthiest schools in the United States, and again, welcoming input from you. And we do have a caller, Tracy. John in Appleton joins us first. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
Happy day.
Yeah, happy day to you.
Thank you. I'm a parent at another elementary school here in Appleton, Jefferson. And last year we attended a healthy food event sponsored by our food district and the food service here. And it amazed me how much processed stuff they still use. The school you mentioned,
Richmond.
Thank you. Sorry. dealt with this, and what's your take on using local food for a school's diet?
Yeah, you know, John. Before you go, though, I did hear that Appleton, the school lunch program in Appleton, is different than many other parts of the state.
You know, another J. Starting Johnston School on the south side of town is doing some interesting things with their lunch program, too. They have a salad component every meal, and they charge a little bit more for that. But the nice thing about that is that if a kid is on free or reduced lunch, they pay the same for this alternative lunch that's hopefully more healthy than the processed stuff that the food service is kicking out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, let's talk about the school lunch programs, the cafeterias. Tracy Minkin, is that one of the reasons why Richmond was chosen, because it has healthy foods in the cafeteria?
Well, it's the caller raises some really excellent points. What we found in our research, both, you know, in Appleton School District and also throughout the country, is we saw a variety of approaches. When you I believe, have a district-wide food provider, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was my understanding based on the paperwork. This is a little harder to change because you're changing, you know, many menus throughout a larger distribution system. We did see in Wisconsin good shifts in this district, and I do know that, for example, Appleton does provide salads and has shifted away from white breads to whole grain offerings. At least half of every meal includes, I mean, every meal includes at least half of the grains are you know, real whole grain mm-hmm. offerings, fruits and vegetables. There has not been a complete move away from processed food, and I understand the caller's, you know, perhaps frustration with that. What we did see is often at the mini school level, you know, right down, you know, on the ground, schools will add into what they've already got. We saw great gardening programs, for example, in elementary schools as well as middle and high schools, where, you know, as a program within the school, they were growing vegetables, working with them in the kitchen, doing extra things to connect kids to where food really comes from. And how to prepare it in ways that brings the healthiest plate, you know, to the table. So, you know, we saw really good stuff at Richmond, but I think, you know, when you really look hard, there are always places to keep things going, you know, and I encourage the caller to get into his school's, you know, dining hall, get into the cafeteria and ask those questions and start pushing for local change.
Mm-hmm. If I can follow up.
Sure.
Joy? I did, and I will be hopefully leading up a nutrition committee at our local school through our PTA on this issue this school year. I'd also like the guest to comment on parent practices at home, because, you know, what kids learn, they learn from home, as well as the use of local foods. I think that this is a potentially huge market to tap into, of getting farmers connected more with local people to, you know, A, reduce transportation costs of food and nurture more education and awareness of the local environment, and really to set a course of change, of course, like Obama wants, throughout our society.
Yeah,
and also, too, one last thing. What did you think of year-round school?
All right. Well, it sounds like a good idea to try to get more local foods and connect the farmer to the community and the school, Tracy Minkin.
Well, it's a wonderful thing to move toward because for so many reasons, food that comes from closer to your table is a wonderful and, you know, I mean, I hesitate to be the expert, mm-hmm. but, you know, a very healthy alternative. It's tempting to say the healthiest, and it probably is. And I commend the caller for stepping forward. Again, what we saw in the most successful schools is a lot of parent participation. We asked schools, do you have, you know, wellness committees? Who's on them? Kids, parents, administrators? Do you have regular meetings? Are those reports part of the PTA? So the fact that you've got at your local school the willingness to you know, set up a nutrition committee, put an interested parent in charge of it, is already a sign that you're going to get some change at your local level, and I think it's great. I'm trying to remember. In terms of year-round school, I do not feel qualified to address it. I'm really sorry.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember what else
that was
we had on the table there.
That was pretty much it. I guess, you know, and it's good for John. He's going to try to get better nutrition in the schools and in the school lunch programs. One of the problems that we've always heard about that is that kids want to eat or like to eat the pizzas and the tacos and the, you know, the fattier, maybe less healthier choices when it comes to the school lunch line. Is that a problem still?
I think we fight this battle socially, you know, everywhere. You know, if you get in your car and drive down your main commercial strip, what are you driving past? Well, you're driving past fast food. It is a cheap alternative, and it's heavily marketed. And, you know, corporate America has been creating consumers of fast food since, you know, these kids are knee-high, you know, to a grasshopper. So this is a big tide to push against. What I think, and this is where schools have been really brave, a lot of schools that ended up in our top contention eliminated food as a reward for anything in the school.
Oh, yeah.
If your homeroom did something great, no more pizza party. Homeroom did something great, no more candy. This is a tough thing to get out of a school because you have a lot of parents who grew up that way. I mean, you know, it was a different time. food was a reward, and we were very impressed with schools taking what was probably not a very popular stand at the beginning, saying, you know what, we're just getting it out of here. We saw high schools eliminating soda and sweetened drink machines. There are a lot of drinks out there that, you know, sort of float under the radar. Well, we're not, you know, a soda, but if you look at the label, there's as much sugar and sometimes salt in those drinks as, you know, in something you're getting, you know, in the fast food line. These were not the most popular decisions, but I think when the school has the will to do so, and this often we saw came from a principal, a nurse on staff, you know, or parents, then over time, and it didn't often take that long, kids got over it, kids got used to it. And again, the most successful schools, at the same time as they were saying, you know, we're not going to have that stuff in our school because it's not good for us, when those schools were pairing that with effective and clear education about why do we need to eat this way, why is it more important to be putting local food, fresh food, unprocessed food into our bodies, and then why we should get outside and move every day, the kids started taking that message home. A lot of schools also that we liked had healthy snack policies, asked parents not to send in the classic tray of cupcakes for a birthday party. Again, boy, this is running aground of some pretty long-established social norms. But they've had success, and so clearly it can be done. I think it just takes a deep breath and some real courage.
Yeah. And Richmond was picked, as many of the top schools were picked, for having this good health and nutrition education. So there are maybe more classes than others when it comes to this sort of thing with the students at Richmond.
Yeah, you know, I think for one thing, we did look at, you know, our kids spending time, literally minutes, on health curriculum. But I think beyond that, it's what's in the curriculum, you know, and schools like Richmond were talking clearly about choices. And this gets back to the fundamental question, you know, we can create in these schools healthy eating environments, but that isn't enough because some schools found, and this is quite interesting, that if all they were doing was taking everything scary away from their cafeteria, those kids were going home and eating junk and just sort of holding it together, you know, for the 8 hours of the school day and then going home at night, making bad choices, and on the weekend making bad choices. So we were very intrigued by some schools that said, you know what, we're not going to take it all away. We're going to create a much healthier setting, but we're going to talk more about what you're choosing, why you're choosing it, and what's really in it. So it's that type of education, I think, that's going to create kids who aren't just being at a healthy school day to day, which is already great, but are going to graduate from that school, move into a very complex eating world and lifestyle choice world, and, you know, we hope make better choices for themselves as they get older.
We'll talk about some of the other top schools in the nation when it comes to healthy schools with our guest Tracy Minkin, who is lead writer of the Health Magazine article, America's Healthiest Schools, after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. As we have been talking about so far, Richmond Elementary School in Appleton is on this top 10 list, number 4 on the list. We'll see what some of the other schools are also doing that makes them healthy schools. And we'll welcome your questions for our guest and what you want to see your school do to become a healthier place for your child after the news.
School.
Kids used to run and play a lot more when we went to school back in the day, and most of us walked 5 miles to school in a snowstorm. But all kidding aside, many kids aren't getting as much exercise as they need and eating the wrong foods, and that's contributing to the obesity epidemic among children and the related health problems. We are talking about the health of our children and the health of our schools this hour with a writer for Health Magazine. The September issue of Health Magazine has a list of America's healthiest schools. And one Appleton school is on the list, Richmond Elementary School in Appleton, number 4 on the list of the nation's healthiest schools. We're talking about why it's there and what makes a school a healthy school and what needs to be done to make schools healthier. We're welcoming your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. In naming Richmond Elementary one of the healthiest schools, Health Magazine writes, instilling health and wellness values is a team effort at Richmond Elementary, which has 277 students in grades pre-K through 6. Everyone, the PE teachers, the classroom teachers, counselors, administrators, food service workers, demonstrate and reinforce healthy lifestyle choices for the students. A strong commitment to health and nutrition education is also yielding lifestyle changes for the students beyond the healthy cafeteria and into their homes. We welcome back our guest, Tracy Minkin, who is the lead writer of the article for Health Magazine, and we welcome our next caller, Dale, in Wauwatosa. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm calling because I read an article in National Geographic Magazine called Shopping by the Numbers, and it discusses the overall nutritional quality index developed by Yale University's Griffin Prevention Research Center, and it scores foods from 1 to 100 based on nutrients, vitamins, sugar, and salt, as well as impact on blood pressure and other health concerns. And apparently stores began to adopt these rankings sometime in 2009. And I'm just wondering if the guest has any information on it. Let me just tell you, for instance, a Popsicle has a Popsicle and soda has a score of 1, where broccoli and blueberries have a score of 100. So that kind of gives you an idea. And a bagel would be 23, and unbuttered, unsalted popcorn rated at 69. So it gives all these different foods that we eat and rates them by overall quality index. So if you're looking to reduce your sodium, you may...
Yeah,
you know, and there's a website that they listed, onqi.org, that gives more information about this.
Yeah, well, do you, Dale, think that schools should employ this list? Is that what you think?
I do, and I think it would be a good idea to at least take a look at it and take a look at the research, because even though Yale University is involved in this, I do know that it had some corporate sponsors, too. So, and I'm not sure what they are because they're on the website, and I don't have that in front of me. But something to look at, and I'm real curious because I haven't heard about this.
Yeah, have you heard about this, Tracy?
Well, you know, I hadn't seen it, mm-hmm. so I'm tempted mm-hmm. to Google it as we're sitting here, but I'll hold off mm-hmm. while we're having our conversation. It's I have seen measures not unlike that, and it is definitely the coming wave. Dale sounds like a savvy consumer in that she needs to look at not only an affiliation with a university, but who's sponsoring the research. We always have to look for that, you know, mm-hmm. when we're looking for sources of information. But it is a really, I think it's a coming thing. Reading a nutrition label with a million voices in your head is a stressful and complex thing. And so I think to move forward with what is the overall profile of a food, what's it doing for us, and, you know, what's it not doing for us, or perhaps even what's not good in it for us, is going to be a very valuable way to make the conversation about choices easier. We didn't hear about this from our schools. Their menu planning generally was looking at some fundamental shifts from high fat to low fat, less fried, to other methods of healthier preparation, emphasis on healthier fats when using fats. Obviously, emphasis on fruits and vegetables, reduction of salt and sugar, a move away from processed and toward fresh, and incorporation of whole grains. These are sort of pillars of healthy eating, and those were some of the major prongs we saw in school menu planning.
Yeah. Look, we haven't talked a whole lot about, we talked a lot about food, but not a lot about activities. What sorts of fitness and lifestyle choice education do the top schools employ?
It's a great question, and I think they really go hand in hand. So I'm glad we're talking about it. I want to talk for a minute about Richmond Elementary because we wrote about this in the piece, but this was a wonderful innovation. At Richmond Elementary, twice a week, the school breaks into a program they called Fit in 15, which is a 15-minute long activity break in a classroom setting.
What a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all could use this probably every day in our lives. Out of our chairs, up and moving, blow off some steam, get our endorphins going, and clear our heads. This was an incredibly successful program, and you can just kind of picture, you know, elementary school kids loving this.
Yeah. But what's the diff between that and recess?
Well, what they have found in recess is, and recess, as we know, in a lot of public schools, it's actually been cut back. So kids aren't getting the opportunity to get outside or move around as much as they used to because schools have been forced to turn those hours toward preparation for testing and other, you know, requirements they are compelled to meet. This is not a substitute for recess. This is in addition to recess. But we did see a really cool thing at another school about recess that ended up putting them not alone in the top 10, but was something we really appreciated, was they had a structured recess that actually involved moving through three different activity zones during the course of recess. Because what they had found was their kids were just kind of hanging out at recess. They weren't really taking advantage of the time to move. They were just, you know,
sitting
chilling
on the fence
in the parlance
or whatever,
of kids. And so the school put this into place, and it was incredibly successful and really did get kids moving around, and it's become a real centerpiece to the day at that school. So, again, I think it's taking creative and assertive looks at both recess, PE, and before and after school activities. I'll just mention, because I love this, we found a school that actually has exercise cycles in their library.
Yeah, that's good.
So the kids can hop on a, you know, bike while they're doing their reading and, you know, move their legs a little bit quietly. There are a lot of creative solutions going on out there.
Yeah. Is there any evidence that these creative solutions are indeed solutions, that we're seeing good results because of this?
Well, schools talked to us about results. Schools are out there really trying to assess what works and what doesn't. We saw drops in obesity in numbers of schools. We also saw better behavior in schools. One of the schools that is in our top 10 struggled with discipline issues. And as they implemented a couple of things, a lot of activity-related changes, but also they made a change to get back to lunches for a minute. They took their school lunch out of their cafeteria and moved it into the classroom. So kids would get their lunches, return to a classroom, sit at a small table with a, you know, a teacher, and have a lunch that is much more like what a family would have. At dinner time, there was conversation, there was quiet, there was pace to the meal instead of that crazy, frenetic atmosphere of the cafeteria. Between these two things, the school found a tremendous reduction in discipline problems. Kids were calmer. Kids were not taking, you know, anxiety and stress and bottled up energy out on each other. They were blowing it off in exercise, and they were learning how to be more civil with each other over a meal. It was pretty remarkable.
We are talking about America's healthiest schools, as chosen by Health Magazine. One of them is an Appleton school, Richmond Elementary School. Tracy Minkin is our guest. She is lead writer of the article that appears in the September issue of Health Magazine. And we welcome your questions for her and maybe even your suggestions. What do you want to see in your school when it comes to health? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 28th. Coming up after 7, Bill Clinton and Joe Biden were the headliners last night at the Democratic National Convention. I'll talk with my guest about their speeches and what Barack Obama must accomplish in his speech tonight. So more talk about the DNC coming up after 7 o'clock. And then Kevin Riley, the president of the University of Wisconsin System, will join us after 8 o'clock to talk about funding for the UW system coming up after 8. We hope you stay tuned. Right now, we hope you join in as we continue our discussion about America's healthiest schools. As chosen by Health Magazine, our guest Tracy Minkin, who is lead writer of the article America's Healthiest Schools, it lists the top 10 public schools across the country for helping teach kids about healthy lifestyle choices. Richmond Elementary School in Appleton, number 4 on the list. Teal in Eau Claire is our next caller. Hi, Teal, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a couple of questions. I am from Appleton originally as well, and I had heard something about the alternative school not using any processed foods or something like that in their lunch program, and I was just wondering if the expert had heard anything about that. And my second question was there at a lot of schools in Appleton or in Wisconsin, they require students to take a certain portion of all the different food groups, even if they're not going to eat it. It's like mandated by the state or something. And I think that that can kind of provide a lot of waste, because if they're not going to eat it, they're not going to eat it. And I was just wondering if this was common around the nation or whatnot. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Teal. I also had heard that I don't know, it's just the alternative school in Appleton. I thought that many of the public schools in Appleton were working with a provider of healthy foods to try to have healthier food choices, maybe not no processed foods whatsoever, but that all of the Appleton schools were developing healthier lunches.
Well, the Appleton district as a whole is definitely working hard on this issue. I mean, when Richmond talked to us about what was on their tables, they were citing district policy, you know, as well as their own commitment on the school level. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely the case, that Appleton district is a real leader in progressive thinking about how to feed many children day-to-day in much healthier ways and still make the lunches affordable. It's a tricky combination, but I think they're doing really good work.
Yeah.
In terms of the alternative school, that didn't come across our radar, but that doesn't mean it isn't a wonderful program.
You mentioned that there were schools that did studies that had schools that had behavioral problems with their students, and then they corrected themselves or improved after better food was served in the lunch programs. A similar study did happen in Appleton. I do recall that a couple years back.
Yeah, we're really finding, and of course it makes perfect sense when we stand back and look at it, that what we eat and how we eat is going to have a profound effect on how we are day to day, as well as, you know, every year at our annual physical. So, yeah, I think increasing real research is pointing to this. And, you know, schools, again, both with their own assessments and their anecdotal evidence, were reinforcing this as well.
Yeah, Teal, I'm sorry, you had other questions? Teal, I'm sorry. Teal had other questions but went away. Do you know much about are the healthy schools on your list? She was wondering about schools watching portion size and other aspects of healthy eating. Are they doing that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I had not heard about a mandate. The caller mentioned a mandate where all four food groups had to go on a plate, and wasn't that creating waste? Our successful schools weren't talking about that kind of approach. So that may be something that sounds great but isn't working as well out in the field. The program I talked about, and several schools did do this that ended up in our top 10, this taking your meal to the table in the classroom, they found that this reduced waste, that kids were, not in that sort of keyed-up cafeteria setting. They were actually taking food and finishing their meal at the table with their teachers, that often they found in the cafeteria, in that craziness to talk to your friends, to get out, you know, to run around, that a lot more food is being left on the plate. So it's
you know, there are a lot of ways to get at waste and make sure that kids are not only picking better stuff, but are eating what they've picked.
Ann in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I was just wondering, you know, the government has lots of subsidized foods that they provide at reduced rates for school districts. And, you know, with those government subsidies, that's where a lot of the processed foods are coming from. And so, you know, what programs are going on to try and create changes in that kind of a situation? I mean, it's difficult enough to try and find sources of non-processed foods at a reasonable cost, and by no means can it even compare to what a district is saving to just get the subsidized food that's already processed from the government.
Tracy?
The reader, the caller mentions a really important point, and it's one I can't address very specifically because our districts and our schools were making these changes and we weren't getting that deeply into how they were making the economics of this work. Mm-hmm. What were they turning away? We did find, though, I have to say, we found schools in, you know, economically challenged areas of this country and districts that were not well funded that were forging change. I think it's a very tough thing to do. And it is something, you know, that we have to continue to look at a large level in terms of what, you know, it takes us back to the soda machine question, which is, you know, these are put in schools as fundraisers. A school can make a lot of money off a soda machine. Very hard to take that out. But schools are doing it, and they're trying to, you know, raise funds elsewhere. But it takes some real will. So I agree with the caller. You know, it's a tough nut.
Says here that West Babylon Senior High in New York, near Long Island, is the healthiest school in America. What does that New York school do that makes it so healthy?
West Babylon Senior High blew us away and blew the judges away on pretty much every front. This is a school that, like Richmond Elementary, has a very integrated community-backed program of health and wellness. They've made a lot of hard choices in their cafeteria. They got rid of that, you know, sort of soda machine shadow cast across the hallways. They've worked very hard on their fitness. Another thing that really impressed us about West Babylon was a PE curriculum that focused on overall wellness, social skills, and what they call lifetime and adventure activities. They also sought to make these kind of PE offerings accessible to every student. You know, we all from our generation have these horror stories of gym class, having to climb the rope, having to play games that we found humiliating, you know, and a stratification between the athletically adept and the not. And a school like West Babylon has said that's history. Everybody can feel good about being active, and there are a lot of ways to think of yourself as an active, healthy person. With a high school population, this is really, really great. You know, this is a risk time for kids in terms of identifying themselves, and so we were very impressed with that. We also, and this is sort of particular to a high school because the kids are older, there was a huge amount of dynamic activity among the students at West Babylon. Kids were really taking charge of things. There's a school wellness council, and it's really led by students. These aren't kids sitting back saying, okay, grown-ups, what are you going to make us do? These were kids taking charge. We were impressed that the school wellness council at West Babylon had only healthy fundraisers, no more candy sales. We thought that was amazing, the bedrock of old high school life, and they turned away from it. We were so impressed that the kids at West Babylon were selling baby carrots, sugar-free gelatin, raisins, and nuts as you know, at snack to raise money for their school. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
So there were a lot of things about West Babylon that really impressed us, and we, you know, just set such a lovely standard for how high school can conduct its day.
I'm glad to hear that climbing the ropes is no longer required. And how about dodgeball? Do you remember dodgeball?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I know, I mean, I have, you know, we all have a certain relationship to dodgeball in our lives. It's either we loved it or, you know, it's a very black part of our background.
Well, we only have about a minute to go. It sounds like you're pretty optimistic that schools are heading in the right direction here when it comes to health.
Well, I think spending time with these schools was a great exercise in optimism. So I encourage people to read this article, and if you know you're frustrated, your school wasn't there, you know, rip this out of the magazine, take it to your school's first PTA meeting, and say, hey, let's get on this. I also encourage listeners to go to our website, health.com, where we list all the schools who were nominated as outstanding schools around the country. And that's a wonderful, wonderful list. You're going to see schools from everywhere there.
Thank you so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure.
Tracy Minkin is the lead writer of America's Healthiest Schools. It appears in the September issue of Health Magazine. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and to Rob Ferret and Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
How she really blew my mind.